Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And we're back with episode 120 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me, as always, is Aiden Morgan.
That's a me.
See, I thought of a whole new way to do it that actually works.
Yeah, that worked really well. We got our names right. And one day, not only will you get the order of our names right, we won't even comment on it. It'll just be a thing we do.
I know. I'm hoping this is the last time I'll actually say something about it. But until I get it locked for, more than once,
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's as always, it's a work in progress. Who among us has not had to work hard to get names in the right order? I don't know why it's difficult. It just is.
It just is. Yeah. It just is. So I'm trying to think, there was a bunch this weekend, but something you mentioned before we started recording, just to kind of clean up last week's business, as it were. I'd mentioned the Legends thing. You hadn't seen Legends. I mentioned there was something in this, not in this last episode, but the one before.
Right.
The 70s London episode.
Mm-hmm.
And they had done with Constantine that, as far as I know, and I've mentioned to a few people, no one's been like, oh no, they did this, had never been done with the character before, and I thought that was fascinating.
Oh.
Which is, we know about his whole childhood, his mom dies in childbirth, and his father calls him killer,
right.
And his father's very abusive for his entire life, and then he gets sent to Ravencroft, I think it is, an institution when until he's 18,
mm-hmm.
Because he's seeing things, and magic and whatever, but his father thinks he's crazy. But we'd never actually seen his mother.
Right, this is what I thought might be the case here.
Mm.
Yeah.
We'd never met her before.
Mm.
And I thought that was entirely fascinating that they were like, let's just do that.
Yeah.
And that they did it so well.
Mm-hmm.
This felt very comic book Constantine. That's how that would have gone straight to then he gets his ass kicked by his father.
He gets his ass kicked essentially by himself and then by his father.
And then his father, right.
That is pure Constantine. Kicking out of the universe and getting just kicked in return.
But also just
great.
The sentimentality that kind of hides underneath him.
Mm-hmm.
Would be I'm going to go out. And everyone's oh, he's going to go out and, find some woman and get drunk and all that. No, he's going to go see his mother for the first time. It was a thing. And just, if we want to continue with Legends, actually, the camp episode that came after it had another kind of key, they really deeply understand Constantine bit for
me. Oh, tell me.
If you know Astra... If the name means anything to you.
Yes.
And for people who don't, one of the early cases with Constantine, he tried to save this little girl.
Right.
And she, there's a portal to hell, and he reaches out and grabs and comes back with just an arm.
Yes. Yeah,
and Astra haunts him for pretty much the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Occasionally, literally. But it is one of those things that Constantine is totally fuck this. And a lot of it is a front because people near him die horribly.
Mm-hmm.
And often it's his own fault.
Right.
Let's be fair. Being Constantine's friend is not a great way to have a long lifespan.
No.
But he has a soft spot for kids in danger because of the Astra thing.
Yes.
And because of his own childhood.
Fair enough. Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, the whole Legends thing of just, whatever. And, sure, he'll pitch in to help the team, but it's still kind of whatever. But then here's this kid who he might not be able to save, and he's like, nope.
Yeah.
I don't care what that takes.
Yep. I will kill myself if need be.
Right, because he just doesn't want that on his conscience again.
Yes.
And it's such a great note, and it's interesting that, because in the shows they've mentioned Astra. And if you watch, his appearance on Arrow and some of the Legends stuff, they've mentioned Astra here and there. And of course, if you watch the Constantine show, they mention Astra a bunch.
Right. I kind of filtered that show out of my memory to a large extent.
It didn't start great.
It did not start great. It seemed to have...
It got there.
It got there, but it was too little too late, obviously.
Yeah. And honestly, as much as I love
the idea of a great, dark, fun Constantine show. I kind of almost enjoy him on Legends more than what we would have gotten with Constantine.
I think so.
Just because it's so different than what we would normally get with him, yeah. You know?
And then if you have a Constantine-led show, the tone is going to be, it's just going to be dark, and that's it.
Yeah.
But with Legends, you have Constantine, where the darkness is essentially hidden beneath this, like, giddy veneer of the show, and it just makes it work all the better.
Yeah. I also noticed that he mentioned to Ray, who I now do have trouble not just calling Ray Ray, but like, you know, like, don't get close to me, to like my, I had a best friend and he died, and I'm like, wait, are they just saying that this is why Chaz isn't around in Legends?
I was wondering about that too. I was like, is that Chaz? Is Chaz dead?
I mean, it has to be.
Yeah, exactly. I hope they.
And
bring...
so I was like, that's a move.
Yeah.
Because
I was kind of.
But
wondering...
again, the Constantine TV Chaz was never comic Chaz.
No.
Which is fine.
No.
But.
But yeah. I was always hoping they would bring like. I wasn't even thinking of the TV Chaz. I was just hoping they would bring like a Chaz like from the comics in. I mean, they still could, because, of course, you know, who knows what they can throw in there to haunt Constantine,
right,
and torment him.
But no, Legends is managing to do a lot with Constantine and still not be a Constantine-centric show,
mm-hmm,
which is really nice. And, of course, this episode was the summer camp one was interesting.
I really enjoyed it. It was clearly not... It's not like... It's not a pivotal episode of Legends of Tomorrow, but it was a great showcase for all the various characters.
Yeah, and it really did show the depth that they're able to play with the characters now that we know them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole Ava thing of, I don't really have a childhood, and that's why she's cranky, and it's just all these little... again, I think you're right, like, it wasn't a pivotal episode in a lot of ways, but it spoke a lot to a bunch of the different characters, like, really mm-hmm. deeply.
Oh, exactly, yes.
And, of course, the kid actors they had for Ava and Sarah were perfect.
Yeah, that was some pretty good... Especially for Ava. That was, like, some great casting, I thought. Like, I thought, oh, shit, that girl's going to grow up to look just like that actor.
Yeah, the girl they had playing Sarah had her mannerisms down,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, very much, very much.
Obviously, the fight scene was a little wonky, but yeah, of course.
Whatever. Yeah, that's fine. I was like I wasn't expecting, you know, miracles with that. So, but still,
right?
Still really good. And there's a great line, and it was actually, I'm pointing out, it was actually pointed out in the AV Club review of the show as well. It's Ray at one point saying, I've seen enough horror movie trailers to know how this ends, or, you know, this doesn't end well. And it's like,
right,
that's Ray. He doesn't watch horror movies. He watches the trailers.
That's a really good point, actually.
He's not, I'm not going to watch the movies. That's scary. So
right.
I thought that was just, there was something kind of delightful in that nice little
yeah.
character note. I thought was great.
Yeah, they walk that really interesting line with Ray.
Because,
mm-hmm. I mean, and I like Brendan Routh, like, you know, I have liked him for a lot of things, but he'd be really easy to turn super annoying in that way that, like, he's not fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the, oh, he's constantly, like, this goofy kind of innocent guy and all this, but it's like, no, that's not quite it.
Yeah.
And I think they fully dialed that in, for me at least, last season with the episode with his childhood.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. That was one of my favorite Legends episodes. I mean, basically, they're like, let's do E.T. You know, and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? Although, for me, the peak of Legends will always be them breaking onto the set of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, Jesus.
And getting John Noble to record dialogue. I was like, who thought of this? Who?
Right, like, you know who he sounds like? The minute that line hit, I was... When they first were like, you know who he sounds like? I was like, you're not. You cannot actually be going this far up your own ass.
Yeah.
Like...
And lo and behold, they did. It's got
they of, did, and it was glorious. Yeah. Like, they did it exactly right.
it's kind of crap dialogue, isn't it? Yes, yes. Oh, man.
Oh,
yeah.
Legends.
Yeah, exactly. This, yeah, well, let's this episode just become Aiden and Adam laughing about Legends of Tomorrow
right.
episodes. Yeah, but really, it is that kind of show. You just watch and you chuckle and you feel.
I am a little upset, by the way. When everything goes to its, because you know, in early December they all have their, well, except for Legends, of course, all their pre crossover episodes, and then they have their crossover episodes, and then they're in winter break.
Mm.
And they break, like, you know, again, like, early December, and they all come back in, like, mid-late January?
Yeah.
Except for Legends.
Ooh.
Which they're changing some nights on a few things, I think. I forget how that works.
Really? Okay.
But Legends doesn't come back till April.
Oh, you're kidding. That sucks.
Let me see if I can find that really quick. Like, I might not be able to find it. Here we go. Hold on. The mid-season return dates for things. No, that's last year. Anyway.
Anyway, the point is Legends is not coming back for a while, so we're just going to have to...
Yeah, it just... It's weird.
Yeah. Why would they do that to us? Why would they do this to us?
I don't know, except... I feel like there's something... Because they did this with Supergirl, remember?
Yeah, I remember that.
So yeah, it's like everything else comes back, like Black Lightning, it comes back like January 21st-ish.
Right.
And, like, it's moving to Monday.
Hmm.
And then Legends won't be back until April when Black Lightning finishes.
This is all
and it's the new Roswell reboot
right.
is coming after Flash, and it's coming in January, like, 15th or so. And so they're slotting that in instead and shifting everything around.
Hmm. I'm kind of...
Which is weird.
Yeah. I'm a little curious about the new... The Roswell reboot. I just... I didn't actually watch the show when it was on. I mean, I knew of it, what it was, but...
Right.
I only watched it maybe a few years ago, and it's a fascinating show to binge watch, partly because in the last season they took such an immense hit in budget that it looked like a show like from 20 years past. It just looked cheap and like it was clear there were whole scenes that were lit by just one sort of glaring overhead light, and it was really crazy bad. And I just thought, you know, this it was never a great show, but it could have been. It did not deserve whatever the hell happened to it.
I've never seen any of it at all. Like, it was one of those shows that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That just at the time. Felt like that generic CW show.
Oh, and it
like,
was.
We have some pretty teens and some mystery. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it wasn't a thing. I'm vaguely curious for the reboot just because it feels like it was one of these shows that happened, and who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And the idea they're like, no. I don't personally give a damn about Charmed, you know, but it has a huge fan base.
Oh yeah.
And so the let's bring back Charmed makes some sort of sense. Like, this was a thing that lasted.
Exactly.
But the idea to bring back Roswell was just the, we don't have any shows that aren't owned by DC, fuck.
that could definitely be the case.
And nothing else is hitting. Like, all their new shows don't seem to be hitting.
Right. I don't even know what their new shows are, frankly.
I don't either anymore. Like, I don't know. Is Valor still on? I couldn't tell you. I have no clue what the show is, even.
Yeah.
And I think that's their problem, right? Like, I mean, Dynasty kind of hit.
Right.
I guess.
And I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is in its last season.
Yes, that's ending.
Right, which is a shame, because I think that's something of a hit for them. And, of course, Jane the Virgin is no more.
Right.
As far as I know, So they need some non-superhero hits, basically. Valor, I just seem to pop up and vanish in a blink.
Also, of course, because of America, that's the only way to really say that.
That's right.
Because of American Thanksgiving, things like the CW stuff and all this. There's nothing new on from Wednesday on.
Ah.
Till
right.
I think like. Probably next Sunday?
So nice.
You know, so you get all your superhero shows, like, straight through Black Lightning, but, like, Riverdale and Supernatural are not going to happen.
Ah.
I did think it was interesting, by the way. So, I don't know if you know this, but, like, certain shows, especially on the CW, do kind of press junket stuff near the end of the first bit of the season.
Right.
Like, before the fall break.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of go, like, hey, look at us, we're doing cool stuff, and they have a bunch of press to come up, and you do set tours and interviews and all this, so you can have stories that you could slowly dole out as they're going into their winter break.
Right.
So, of course, they just had that this last week.
Is that the eat pie, fight demons?
Yes. So, two of the parties, and this amuses me, because they had two parties, believe it or not. One was for the Supernatural 300th episode.
Woo! Holy crap.
Which is not airing anytime soon. Like, I think it's airing on the other side of the break.
Right.
But they didn't want to do a whole big press thing for it anywhere other than up where they're still filming. And they're not going to get a whole bunch of press up there randomly just for that. So they folded that whole party into their big invite everyone up thing.
Ah.
But that's like episode 14. It's going to be a bit. I don't even know when that would... Yeah, I don't even know when that might air.
Huh. Well, I'll be watching it.
I'll watch it when it happens.
Yeah.
But... Like, yeah, it has to come at some point late in the game.
Right.
Like, February. Because, like, yeah, episode 8 is December 6th, which I think is the end of their fall run. So, yeah, it's like February, March, maybe even. But they had their party. which did feature, apparently as part of it, was a big neon sign, eat pie, kill demons.
I mean, that the sign was great. Also, the image of Jensen Ackles, like, pointing at it with that grin was really, really funny.
Yeah, no, there were a bunch of pictures of it. Like, most of them were all serious, and then he apparently did this one.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they had a party for the December 4th, which is at least soon, 100th episode of Flash.
Oh, yeah. Is that one being directed by Tom Cavanagh?
I think so. I don't remember.
Okay. I could be wrong, but...
And, you know, I'm sure that, like, the Arrow one, where they're like, we're going to give everyone back, they'll do something with Flash. My guess is they'll do a time travel thing because they can. So we can go back and see things back then type of...
Yes. I believe I read the synopsis and...
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know it was out.
Barry and Nora go back in time.
Mm.
And Barry is... iffy about it because he doesn't want Nora to see
right.
himself in
something.
The past. Yeah, and it's directed by Tom Cavanagh, and so there you go.
Okay.
Yeah,
I did see a synopsis of kind of, well, not really a synopsis, but sort of a hint. Like, they start talking a little bit about the Supernatural 300th episode, and it sounds like it's going to be amazing, frankly.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Because, like, the 200th was the play.
Right.
And apparently this one is going to be possibly, like, documentary-ish. And it's going to be all about Lebanon, Kansas. Because the whole joke is, like, they're supposed to be in Lebanon, Kansas, right? Where the bunker is?
Right.
And they live there, but we've never seen them in the town.
That's true.
And so this is going to be a whole bunch of, like, people in the town who are just like, yeah, these guys, they come in for pie. Like, just people in the town talking about them.
Oh, crap. That's
like, well, I'm sure that there's also, like, a mystery and whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The idea that we're finally going to see the town and what the townspeople think of these two idiots is kind of an amazing gift.
Oh, I love that idea so much. I mean, they were always... I used to watch Supernatural when you know, binging it because
right.
it was kind of like... I mean, it filled like a sort of X-Files void for me. It was like watching a couple of dudes in lumberjack plaid going around killing monsters. And I was like, this is good. And it's, you know, it's got some drama. And there's stakes and whatnot. And then... I don't know the first one, like, it must have been a Ben Edlund one or something, I might have been like one of the ghost facers ones, and I was like, holy shit, these people can do anything they want, and they are.
Yeah, it was. It had to have been in season two.
Yeah, no,
my guess.
It was a season two. It was definitely a season two one, because season one it was fun, but it was conventional, you know, all things.
Right. It was just a show.
Yeah, exactly.
And
it didn't even have any really good episodes until at least episode 10 or so, when you start getting Meg, you know, when they start expanding the world of Supernatural
right.
a bit. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things, like, because I kind of chain-watched the first, like, 8 seasons.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then I've been watching since. It hasn't been that many years since I first saw the show,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? Like, it's been, like, 14 years.
Right.
But I don't think the show's ever going to end at this point.
No, it'll just, we'll be dead before the show.
Right.
Yeah.
But at some point, I kind of feel like I want to try doing a rewatch. Just because. Like, I remember I was at a con, and I was getting ready in the morning, and I decided to flip on the TV, just because I did.
Right.
Which I actually almost never do, because I'm just too busy getting ready for the con. But I was, you know, in a mood. And there was some channel that was doing a rerun of Supernatural. And it was, like, the big episode of season 5, and I turned it on just as, hey, ass butt. And I was just like, fuck, this show has its moments. Like, and again, like, the last few seasons have been really good.
Yeah.
But it did remind me, like, it used to also be, like, really good. Like, it wasn't, like, a new thing.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Hey, ass butt. That was, Yeah, honestly, I think seasons 4 and 5 are still mine. Like, if someone says, hey, Aiden, you want to sit down and binge watch, you know, seasons 4 and 5 of Supernatural right now, I'd be like, well, I do have to give a speech at the UN, but okay, you know, that's...
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I am really fond of a lot of the recent seasons,
but not as a whole.
Like, mm-hmm. I'm a fan of them.
Yeah.
And I think they had a lot of really great payoff moments for stuff. You know, Dean and God's Talk
mm-hmm.
was amazing.
Okay, I don't think have I seen that one? I'm not
sure. The God season is still an incredible season
yes.
just for the end of it. With, you know, just all of these weird conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, like, they've had a lot of fun and all of that. But, yeah, I think as a whole, like, as a watchable season...
Yeah.
Although I forget if it's like season 6 or something like that, where the car had been destroyed yet again.
Yet again.
And it got this hero moment when it came back.
Right.
Like, just the way you do, like, the slow motion, like, here's this character walking back on the stage with heroic music, except it was a car just driving down the road. And it was one of the funniest fucking things they did.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm gonna...
But yeah,
and here's something terrible. Supernatural, which has been on Canadian Netflix forever, is gone. They removed it.
That's weird.
Yeah. So basically, yeah. Buffy, Angel, Supernatural, they're gone.
Huh.
I mean, sometimes they just come back, like they just sort of pop
right.
up
I mean,
again.
There are deals, and the deals fall through.
Yeah,
and then
the deals get renewed, and blah blah blah. I'm always kind of curious about the whole. They're the entire way that Netflix and CW or Netflix Canada and CW work, because some other shows are like pop up every week, like they so like Riverdale, The Flash, Black Lightning, Dynasty, The 100, all those
right.
ones will like the you get them like a day after they air.
Yeah,
and then but others like Supergirl, you don't like that. You just get get it when you get it, right? And I think it might be partly owned by the other network. So,
well, yeah, and there's also a weirdness because I know that like in the UK, because if you're outside of the US, if people don't know, a lot of the stuff goes like that. Like Netflix just has it the next day, which we don't get at all in America,
right?
But. Like, I know that in the UK, there's a bunch... Like, the core, like, Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, Legends, don't show up on Netflix because they're on some other channel that has its own deal.
Hmm.
But, like, Black Lightning does.
Right.
Because it's not part of that deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, once you leave the US, there's a lot of weird deals that'll change based on region.
Yeah.
For what shows up where and when. It, it's it's a nightmare to figure out.
Oh, yeah. And back when you could game Netflix a bit by using a VPN, like I would go to British UK Netflix and be able to watch Agent Carter episodes, for example, as they aired. And it's and on and on and on, but
right.
But now that game is over, and you can't VPN Netflix no more. But still, it makes for fascinating watching, because I just the other day I was like, oh, I missed Supergirl, I'll just go watch it on Netflix, and I was like, oh shit, it's not one of those ones.
Right. Yeah, see, whereas again, in the U.S., like, there's that overall deal where nothing, because again, in the U.S., there are no shows that go up like that.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
But it's the week after the finale airs for any season of the CW stuff.
Oh.
It shows up complete on Netflix.
Right.
Which was a problem last year, of course, because the crossover started with Supergirl, and because Supergirl season got weird, everything else showed up like a month before it.
Right.
But people weren't watching because they want to wait to do that. This year, of course, the one that's going to be left out is Legends, which isn't part of the crossover, so hey, there you go.
Damn. I'm real, everything I've seen so far, I'm really, really looking forward to the crossover.
I have heard, though, that while it is a crossover, that the episodes are also standalone.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Which makes sense if they're doing, like, Elseworlds stuff. Like, if every one is a different Elseworlds, like, they keep hopping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you could do it.
Yeah,
but
and
I'm fascinated to see what they're doing with this.
And I think it's probably a good idea, because you're avoiding, you know, you're not damaging your ratings potentially by sort of
right.
making it dependent upon shows that maybe you watch Supergirl but you don't give a shit about The Flash, so you're not going to be watching an episode of Supergirl and thinking, well, this makes no sense, and you're not going to go over and start watching The Flash to make sense of it. So
right, and yeah. And I think that again, like, they have that problem of, like, with the Netflix thing and with DVD releases and all that, that people get pissed.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I know, again, in the UK, like, they used to release they didn't do it with Earth X, but they did it with, like, the two before that.
Mm-hmm.
Where they would release them on a Blu-ray set of just the crossover.
Right.
And then they stopped doing that. So, yeah, there were problems with the crossover episodes. Like, again, like, if you buy the series on things like Blu-ray, too bad.
Right.
You have to buy them all, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's basic logistics. But, I mean, I still really appreciate the event one. I thought the Earth
yes.
X crossover was just,
oh, it's so fantastic.
Yeah, it was so much fun to watch.
And granted, like, I think it was like the first and last parts that were the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Not that the middle sagged, but just the middle had just so much weird shit to get done.
Yeah. No, I get it. Of course, they had Russell, what's his face, as Ray.
Toby.
Russell Tovey as Ray, a.k.a.
Yeah.
Ray. I always love seeing Russell Tovey anyway, because it gives me fond memories of being human. So,
yeah, yeah, no, that's the U.S. version of the show is so terrible. But
I know,
that's another one that I always mean to rewatch. Like, I have the Blu-ray set sitting around, and I keep going, like, I should rewatch Being Human, and then I just never do.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, like that Fringe. These are the things that, like, I want to rewatch at some point.
Yes. Yeah, Fringe is like an occasional rewatch for me. So, and I generally like start like in season 2 and season 3. Those are like Supernatural 4 and 5. Season 2 and 3 of Fringe are the ones that I can.
Right, you want like the last like episode or two of season 1, and then you're fine.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're pretty much set.
So, are you caught up with Supergirl?
I think I am. The last episode I watched, well, there was the episode where she's in the suit. In the suit, which is, yeah, that had some wonky moments.
Yep.
And there was one after that too, right?
Yes.
What happened in this one? Man, why am I blanking?
It was one of these, like, I mean, there's an alien that can heal people. And a lot of it was, you know, is he good, is he bad?
Oh, I haven't seen
that one.
But
just, yeah, and just they're leaning in heavier and heavier every episode to basically, like, the internet is trash, which was hysterical. They were just having fun with, you know, oh God, you read comments. And and just the whole, like, people getting, you know, going on these forums and becoming these radical kind of terrorists.
Yeah.
And they're just leaning in harder and harder every week, and I'm just fascinated by it. Because I think, I mean, it's absolutely what the show, like, if you're going to do, like, a Superman, Supergirl type show, lean into the idea that, like, they bring hope, but that the world can get dark.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean?
Right.
How do you do this? And I think it's what the show should be used for. Because, you know, sure, you still have punching, but, you know, you can have a lot of fun with it. I think this was also the Parasite episode.
Oh. Well, they sort of introduced that idea in the previous one.
Yeah, it's the return.
Right, but I figure the way... Yeah, I thought, well, you can't... Because I thought I was watching that, I'm thinking, well, you can't introduce the notion of Parasite and then just kind of leave it.
Toss it off, yeah.
You have to bring it back somehow. Okay, so that's good. It's one of my favorite...
But they also have the new person who Alex has to report to the DEO, and they do a really turn with that.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like, I didn't see that turn coming.
Okay.
And it's, again, it's fascinating. Like, it plays right into their bigger season.
Mm.
And it's just, it's one of these, the world is messy.
Mm.
And I adore them for not backing off of the world is messy.
Cool. Oh, I'm looking forward to this. I also read some synopses of later episodes in which Nia Nal is having prophetic dreams. So
of course she is, because she's Dream Girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So this is
I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I saw that and I'm like, oh good, they're making it happen.
They're pulling that trigger.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Good. Yeah, I'll have to catch up and watch that episode of Supergirl.
Yeah.
And we'll... Anyway.
And I am still happy that, like, Flash is not falling prey to absolute darkness this season again.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, I think I may be an episode behind on Flash. Man, it's just too freaking many.
It's been a week, man. Yeah, it's been a week.
It's been a week. It has indeed been a week. But yes, I'm still... I still think they're nailing the tone of Flash. Much... Like, I frankly think I just kind of signed off of last season at some point, and I thought, I'm just going to let this go, and maybe they'll get better later. I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So.
Yeah, no, Flash has been fun. I said, Arrow's still fascinating, although it really is feeling more and more like this is the last season.
I'm sort of feeling just that as well.
We've gotten so far.
Right.
And Ollie's still in prison. You know, it's like, no one is wearing costumes. Except, like, occasionally in, like, the flash forward to this dire thing. It's just... I really am feeling now that, like, okay, we're not going to get a renewal. We're going to get Batwoman instead. And I'm fine with this.
Yeah, I'll go for Batwoman.
Especially because if they wanted to, you can pull Argus into that just easily enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you get as much or as little of the cast as you want.
Right.
Like, you can bring over Diggle, you can bring over, like, it just, there are a bunch of people who have worked with or are working with Argus now that you could still bring in a bunch of the side cast and rebuild them.
Hmm.
So, fascinating. It's a new look.
Yeah.
Trying to think, what else is going on?
Oh, I watched the entirety of the first season of She-Ra and The Princesses of Power.
I have not gotten to watch it because I didn't really care that much about He-Man or She-Ra when I was a kid. And I hear good things about the show.
Yeah, I mean,
But I have just no... Again, it's not aimed at me. It's not, you know, for me. It's a kid's show. Doesn't mean it can't be good.
Right.
Or not even something I enjoy. It's just like there's not been any push for me to be like, I should really make sure to watch this.
Well, I was curious about it. Mostly because I was Noel Stevenson. Of Lumberjanes and whatnot fame. And I thought, well, that's going to make it at least, it's going to give it a lot more depth than you would expect from a She-Ra cartoon. I mean, that's what I figured going on. And then in my YouTube feeds, there was a video that popped up from somebody, and the title of the video was She-Ra is Woke Garbage. And I thought, oh, adult men are getting upset about She-Ra.
Oh, God, yes.
And I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to watch it now then. Because if this dipshit on YouTube doesn't like it, it's probably good. And it is.
Yeah, no, I've heard nothing but great things about the show, and I kind of it's making me want to watch it.
Yeah, the...
But I'm just so far behind on everything.
Oh, I know. It's, I mean, it's... well, if anything, it reminds me very much of Voltron Legendary Defender.
Except gayer.
Holy crap.
In a good way. I mean, that's like, that's nothing but a great thing, right?
No, this... I mean Stevenson was quoted as saying, you know, I assume that all characters in my work are gay unless told otherwise.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, there's sort of like... I mean, it's a kid's show, so there's this sort of, like, strong current of, like, friendship, affection, and it's polymorphous, perverse, it's pansexual, but it's not overtly sexual, because it's still that sort of, like, crushes are kind of still innocent. They're obsessive and all-consuming, but
sure.
they're not necessarily... sexual, like, or maybe you don't know what it is quite yet.
Right, but I mean, that's, again, like, this is the sort of thing that shows used to do, but only, like, heteronormatively. There's no reason you can't do that.
Exactly. Like, there's a one character who's, he's a sailor, and his main claim to fame is setting his ships on fire. And has to be constantly stopped from setting his ships on fire because he thinks it's cool. But one of the main characters, Bo, develops like this insane crush on him right from the get-go. And it's serious. Like, it's one thing to like see these shows where you see same-sex attractions between women. That's kind of almost
right.
It's almost normal. But to see it play out between two men on a children's cartoon show is really, really quite radical. And really delightful. Others. But the thing that really makes the show for me is the relationship between Adora, aka She-Ra, and Catra. Because if it's the premise is the same as the original cartoon, She-Ra grows up as the ward of Hordak, like she's working for the Horde. And then in the original cartoon, He-Man shows up and says, "Oh, you've been brainwashed, or you're under a mind control spell. You know, you're actually She-Ra." And in this one, of course, she and her best friend Catra leave the Fright Zone, and they go into the Whispering Wood, and Adora discovers the sword, and then runs into Glimmer and Bo, and realizes that essentially that she's been lied to and manipulated all her life. And then she, in the second episode, she confronts Catra, who goes to get her, and says, "Catra, don't you realize what's been going on? We've been manipulated and lied to for years." And Catra says, "Are you stupid? Did you not realize that what was going on?" And it's this heartbreaking moment when Adora realizes that her best friend knows the game, but is playing it anyway and just doesn't really give a shit. And here's the big rift between them. And it only gets more complicated as the show goes on, but wow. And it is also like deeply, deeply like romantic as well. And it's fascinating.
Nice.
Yeah. But I think there are some problems with the show, like from a perspective of is She-Ra woke? And in some ways it's kind of not. Like, Adora is still, like, the white blonde woman who's better than everybody else and is there to save everybody. Like, that's still there, right? They have to figure out how to work with that at some point. And one of the characters, Entrapta, is the science geek princess. But the show reveals her to be sort of deeply amoral and is just willing to work on her toys regardless of the consequences. And they need to figure something out with that, because they're kind of saying that science and scientists are just are essentially amoral. And I'm a little bit I didn't quite like that take on it, frankly.
Sure, but I mean I think that, you know, again, like everything, that there's room to grow and
there is room
to
grow. Yeah.
You can't start at your finish line, frankly, with your characters.
Exactly.
And something that I think a lot of criticism, and I'm not, you know, saying you specifically, I'm just saying in general, there is that weird problem where people are just like, "Well, here's what it is in minute one."
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is a thing where I know that, I mean, I have enough confidence in the show that I know that they're thinking about these things. But they are just saying they're gonna have to think about them and deal with them in some way. Because it's just otherwise there's a few things that render it a little hollow. But whatever. It's She-Ra.
Yeah.
And it's a delightful show, and I mean, if I had kids, I would be sort of like marching them to the screen saying, "Watch this. Damn you."
Nice.
Yeah. It's so gay. I love it. Anyway.
Oh, I'm trying to think, what else have I seen even? Good Lord. It really has just, we just are both apparently brain dead today.
Yeah.
Because there was stuff. I don't know what it was.
Oh, there was Riverdale, and I just watched the most recent episode of Riverdale.
The weird ass Riverdale episode, yes.
Yeah, the one where they, Jughead and friends are playing Griffins and Gargoyles, and it's playing out in the real world at the same time.
Right.
Which leads me to my theory that essentially that Riverdale is actually a creation in Jughead's mind.
Oh yeah, no, this could be going for
yeah
for the Westfall universe stuff real easy.
Oh yeah, yeah. But even so, it's making me realize that actually the story of Riverdale really is kind of the story of Jughead's ascension from like this sort of Prince Hal character, rejecting his lineage to becoming like a serpent, then the Serpent King, and now he's on his way to becoming the Game Master and perhaps the Gargoyle King. Yep, or just the sort of the power behind Riverdale. Whether supernatural or not, that's
yeah. There was that weirdness of like, I get the I'm gonna pattern this game off of what's happening, but the fact that it tracked like 1-to-1 the entire way through yeah. was a cute conceit, but it also did because it was happening in supposed real time, right?
Yeah, and at the point when the warden says, you know, where is the red paladin? It's like, what the hell is going on?
Right. Yeah, it's just like this is getting weird.
Yep.
Oh, but Riverdale.
Oh yeah. Oh, but Riverdale. That's the answer to most things. And I actually, almost every episode of Riverdale that I watch becomes my favorite episode of Riverdale until the next one. and this again is my new favorite episode of Riverdale. Only in season two did I find I watched and thought, this is not my favorite episode of Riverdale.
That's very sad.
It is sad indeed. Yeah, that's the bar that I set for Riverdale. Every episode has to be the absolute craziest, best thing, and dumbest thing ever. The only thing this episode was missing was a musical number.
It's true. There was no musical number this episode.
Like there
was Fight Club instead.
There was Fight Club instead. And like they couldn't like burst out into song while they were on their motorbikes. Like, what the hell?
Oh, they could have, those cowards. They totally could have.
Exactly. Turned into like, you know, an episode of Grease, you know.
Right, like they put Archie in the trunk.
Yep.
And he's like, you know, he's singing the chorus very softly and muffled now because he's in a trunk. It's like, my boyfriend's back. Like, it could have been a thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you've got it. Maybe next episode. Maybe they'll bring the stealth musical back.
I hope so.
Yeah. And I went yesterday. Also, I went and saw Widows.
Oh.
Yes.
How was that?
It was a wonderful movie. And like nice. Genuinely one of the best sort of like heist movie thriller things I've seen in quite some time.
Hmm.
And
I'll tell you what.
Directed by Steve McQueen and I believe co-written with Gillian Flynn. It's kind of ballsy because basically all of them, like you introduce all of the main characters in the first few minutes through these scenes like intercutting like between the morning before a heist and then the evening when the heist starts going really, really wrong. And all the main characters, all the main characters, and like there's Liam Neeson, there's Shane Bernthal, there's a few others, they die. They all get burned up. And then what's left is all the widows who have to basically deal with the fallout from this botched heist. Interspersed with it is a complex tale of like Chicago politics and race. There is a shot that is just an absolute tour de force Colin Farrell plays Mulligan is his name, Jack Mulligan. He's running for alderman. He's like, you know, his dad was alderman, probably his dad before him, and he's sort of announcing this like minority women-owned like initiative that's been going on like in this part of the ward in Chicago, and it's basically like this burned out, you know, area that just looks like, you know, it looks like, you know, just like hell on earth, basically.
Right.
I've seen those areas in Chicago, actually. I mean, it's just, you know, lots of empty lots, lots of vacancies, lots of people hanging around doing nothing because they got nothing to do.
Sure.
And so he talks about it. Then they, anyway, so he does that. And then he gets in the car with his campaign aide slash girlfriend. And all of a sudden the shot just, basically the camera just puts itself on front of the car and you don't see inside, you just hear the dialogue, and you're just watching the neighborhood go by as they drive. And
okay,
as like, and it's like within the course of 3 minutes you watch the neighborhood go from like this impoverished area to like, oh, this looks okay, to like, oh shit, here's like, you know, 1% America. And then it stops and it's his, and it's the, and it's his house, and he gets out.
Oh.
And it's like You've watched like the entire divide between poverty and wealth in the same ward just play
nice.
Out in one shot. Meanwhile, you know, the Mulligan is like saying things like to it's like, have you ever slept with a black man? She's like, oh, is that what you're worried about? Is it just comes down to ego and measuring your dick? And as the camera pans back and forth, you realize you can kind of just barely see in the car that their driver is black, right? And he's just like, no, this is my job. He's just driving. And it's it's the whole scene has got like several things going on at once. You just, and it's
nice.
It's great. And but no, though, I would highly recommend Widows to whomever might be on the fence about going to see Widows. Is it
very
my
cool
pick of the week? Yes, it is.
It might be.
It might be. The other thing that really surprised me is it didn't have a lot of publicity going in. Like the marketing campaign was pretty small, I think, for Widows.
Yeah.
And so we went on a Saturday afternoon, fully prepared for like a theater of like maybe 5 or 6 people, and it was
right
almost sold out.
Nice.
And it was really, really unexpected because I live in a small city that is, you know, and the market for like difficult heist movies is not exactly.
It's not the biggest thing, huh?
Not the biggest thing. And yet people, tons of people saw it, and like everybody seemed to really like it. So that was very, very, I don't know. It was encouraging.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I did get to watch, I think I mentioned this to you in an email, John Leguizamo's Latin History for Morons.
Oh, I saw
Netflix.
That too. Yes, I watched it as well.
And that was, you know, it was, of course, both funny and really just well done.
Oh, was it ever?
I mean, considering the time he had.
Yeah.
To cover all of this, you know, it's just, I don't know how to describe it to people, is part of my issue.
Yeah, it is tough because it's, I mean, it's a story about his family, it's a story about like race and class and history and, you know, things, and it's also funny as hell. And it's just everything. I mean, it's not a stand-up routine, it's a one-man show. You know,
right.
And
it was on Broadway, like it was a one-man show.
Yeah, and it was brilliant. You forget actually that, I mean, Leguizamo is, I mean, he's a extremely good actor. You kind of forget because you don't see him in a lot of stuff lately. Well, he's, I guess he's doing a few things, but
right.
Yeah, and often he will get a lot of like one note roles, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, no, it was extremely good. It reminded me of the heyday of like Spalding Gray's monologues.
Yes.
That's the only analog I can think of. Like I thought, hey, this is almost like watching like Swimming to Cambodia, but with a little more sort of like physical activity and yeah. And dancing. His dancing.
I mean, obviously dancing.
It was so good. That whole thing where he's like, where he talks about, because we get, you hear about, you know, Latino people in the States on the census saying they're white, and of course, what you don't get, and you think, oh yeah, okay, it's they're taking part in the great sort of expanding, ever expanding franchise of whiteness.
Right.
But of course, the way he puts it, he's like, no, some of them are just scared. They don't want to be deported. They don't want to, they want to hide. And so that really hit home. Partly because my family history, my mother's side is Portuguese, and for all intents and purposes, we're just white as the driven snow. And it's just part of my history that I find interesting, but I've never really explored properly. So seeing this really kind of, you know, because I've, you know, when he was dotting up the little islands in the Caribbean, that's my family, right?
Yeah. I mean, and for me, it was just funny just because I always forget that he's from New York.
Yeah, right.
And there was a whole lot of just, you know, when he was growing up and just talking about the stuff, and I'm like, oh, God, yes.
That's New York. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just kind of fun.
Yeah.
Although, and I know we're running out of time here, but I did want to switch gears one more time to my pick of the week.
Oh, yes, please.
Which is Beastie Boys' book.
Oh, yeah. I've been hearing really good things about this.
This book is, I mean... It is like this 500-page odd like hardcover tome, and you could not do this book. I don't know how this book would work on a Kindle. But it's worth just paying the money for, and getting it a physical copy. I mean, there are just hundreds of pictures, but it's mostly written from Ad Rock and MCA's like are writing it, and sometimes they'll take a chapter each. Sometimes they'll both be in a chapter and they'll mark whatever sections with like a little like MD or, you know,
right.
AH in parentheses, Fred M. Horowitz, if you don't know.
Oh yes.
But they also break into each other's stuff. They'll comment on it. Like they're little like side comments, and sometimes it's them commenting on their own thing. Sometimes it's one of these, you know, oh, and this thing happened, you know, it was this car. It's like, I'm pretty sure it was, you know, it wasn't a Ferrari. And like they'll occasionally just like be insulted by each other jokingly.
Right.
And it's priceless for that alone. And then they have other people who are writing the occasional like essay about New York at the time, or, you know, this DJ that they knew who was running a club, and she'll talk for a bit about it and how it loops into them, of course, but it paints a very, very accurate and very vivid picture of New York at the time.
Hmm.
Mostly from the music scene, but also just culturally, which is, again, fascinating. At one point, Amy Poehler comes in and discusses, like, 12 of their videos.
Oh,
which was just very quick and kind of hysterical. If only for, like, the three MCs and one DJ video, which, if you've never seen it, is fucking priceless, because it starts off with, like, just this photo, like this shot of the three of them in this basement somewhere, not moving. They're just holding this one pose. And then you go, and it's like Mixmaster Mike with like this weird backpack walking through the streets and like slowly getting into this building and getting downstairs and making his way to the room that they're in.
Huh.
But like it takes its time. It's like a full like minute or so.
Hmm.
And like it would occasionally cut back to them still holding the pose. And they hold the pose right up until he, you know, like drops the needle on a record. And then the song starts, they start moving, they do the whole song, and then, of course, the song ends, and he picks up the record, picks up the needle, and they're back in their pose, and he just walks off. And so it's this kind of surreal, fun video that you should look up. But at one point in the refrain of the song, it's, you know, Mixmaster, cut faster. And in Amy Poehler's thing, she's like, and he did it. He cut faster. You know, it's just like... And it's this great little weird bit. But yeah, no, it there is discussion of various tracks off of various albums, which are usually just quick little teeny side bits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it really does get into them, and it's also, of course, a love letter to MCA, to Adam Yaut, who died.
Of course, yeah.
And so there's a whole lot of their memories of him and just how great he was and all the weirdness involved in his life. And they do things like they talk about like these terrible things that they did. You know, like, oh, we did this prank. It was really funny at the time. There's no excuse for it. It's horrible. We were teenagers. We thought it was funny. Like, they're not afraid to apologize.
Yeah. Huh.
Which, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't do, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, it is definitely my pick of the week. Like, it was just, I tore through that thing. It's, I kind of compared it to, if you ever read, there's an oral history of Saturday Night Live. That's ancient by now. It's like 10 years old, I'm sure. Easily.
Oh, yes, yes, I think I have heard, yes.
Yeah, Live from New York?
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite oral histories.
Hmm.
And this felt like that. In terms of just, like, it's eminently readable, it's just in, you know, obviously their own voice, but their voices come through in how they write really well.
Hmm.
So, yeah, just it reads really quick, and it's funny, and it's, you know, full of interesting weirdness. So, I mean, obviously, if you're a big Beastie Boys fan, you're going to want the book. But even if you're not, like, and you're just curious, like, what the music scene was in, like, the late 70s, early 80s, what all of that felt like, it is just endlessly fascinating.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of the book.
That sounds good. I will pick that up, actually. Can I hold on 1 second? Oh my god.
Yep.
I have to do one thing, quick thing here. I'm gonna mute it.
I shouldn't actually sing that song.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay. I was actually singing a song I shouldn't sing, but no, there's this thing, and I'll let you in on the thing.
Oh.
So, you know the little circus music bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, a couple years ago at Emerald City, there were a bunch of us, you know, me and DJ, and we're sitting next to our friends Valentine Barker, and Diane's there helping him out. And we were just having a moment of like, oh god, this show feels endless. And I don't remember who started it. It was possibly me. But one of us just, and it became like, this is the song we sing at cons.
Right.
Endlessly.
Ah.
Like, it is a weird sickness. Every con I do with Valentine or DJ at this point, it happens. We can't help it.
Right.
And so, like, a 4-day show like Emerald City, it seriously, we must spend, over the course of 4 days, like, 2 full hours. If you pieced it together, just sometimes that's all we need to do, you know. Just
fair enough.
But it'll occasionally, like, we'll be hanging out, like, because, you know, Valentine and Diane live in town, and so we'll be hanging out somewhere, having dinner, you know, on the patio, whatever. And one of us just have that moment, just like, it's like, nope, we're not behind the table. I can't do it. That song is not allowed to infect our entire lives. But anyway, we're hitting the hour mark, so we can do some music.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I'm getting texts and stuff like that.
Yeah, no problem.
Anyway, yes, we will close out and play that music.
Woo!
Woo-da-boo!